just saying that. So I'm really honored to be introducing them this morning. She's here with her husband, Chris. They've been married 15 years. They have three girls, live here locally in Encinitas. And they're here to give us a real honest look at marriage through their experiences together. So welcome, Emily and Chris.
Hello. Oh, there we go. Do I need to... By the way, that book that Jen was talking about... Yep, I hear you. Was on grief and pain and suffering. So I stood up here and was like, who wants to spend the summer with me talking about grief, pain, and suffering? It'll be great! But it actually was really great. And I'm so glad Jen joined.
Oh, just need a moment. I mean, I don't. You guys do. But yeah, thanks for having us, you guys. Get comfortable. We're here for a little while. But hopefully this is fun.
Good technical thing here.
I feel like I need to sit the same place as you.
We've never done this before.
Also, I don't know where to put my water. I'm going to put it right there. Okay, really, we've never done this before together. So whatever your expectations are, you're going to want to lower them. And then you're going to want to do that one more time. And then we're all going to be good here today. These are the years, the MOPS years are the years of low expectations anyway. Oh, is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. Is this working yet? What is? Is there a lot of feedback on that mic?
Yes.
Why? Let's see. Am I doing something wrong? Is it my necklace? Is that okay? Somebody wave at me if the feedback's bad. Melissa, it's your job. Okay. Okay, so just take my minute to not be nervous anymore. So yes, I was in MOPS at the tables here where you're sitting for 6 years, and then before that, 2 years at a different MOPS group. I will say, we did not have music during my MOPS years. That was awesome. Oh my word. Great addition. Our youngest child is in kindergarten, which basically means we're empty nested now. So we've survived officially the MOPS years, just barely. We are your regular person on the street speakers today, which I think is great, and I think you all know that you have probably gained more wisdom from the women at your table and from the panel this fall than perhaps the paid professionals. We have so much to teach each other, and sharing our stories is a true gift we can give each other, and that's basically what we want to do today, is just share a little of our story, a little of what's worked and what hasn't, in hopes of encouraging you. Our hope is that you can sit and rest and be and listen and not hear this as a list of to-dos and shoulds, because you have plenty of that in your life, but just take this as an affirmation and encouragement that the work that you're doing in your marriage matters, because marriage really, really matters.
So a little background on us. I work in mental health, and I work with adolescent boys and their families in Vista. I've been there about 9 years, an organization called New Haven. Emily is a stay-at-home mom, which means she's a full-time volunteer at the church, at the school, in the neighborhood. She also spent some time at a pregnancy center in Vista and does some writing projects on the side. I'm from the Bay Area originally, Northern California, and Emily's from Chicago.
Go Cubs.
There's a lot there.
Anybody else? Good.
We went to college together, a small school in Santa Barbara called Westmont. And any Westmonters?
Yeah.
We became friends freshman year. We were in the same major, communication studies, and then we accidentally and unexpectedly fell in love senior year, and we got married at the age of 23, felt like babies. And
this fall
we celebrate 16 years.
It's amazing. We're so old. So I was always very clear in my head before marriage and in early years of marriage that I was going to be a boy mom, and I was going to be a really, really good boy mom. So these are our three children. Samantha, Abby, and Hannah. Samantha turns 11 on Monday. She just got her ears pierced. She referred to herself this morning as a tween. Like, is that a tween? An 11-year-old? I don't even know. But she said she was. I don't know. Abby just turned 8 and is in 2nd grade, and Hannah is our Spitfire 5 and in kindergarten. Thank God she's in kindergarten, though. There's always so much more than meets the eye with family photos, and for us, it's that they look real sweet and shiny in that photo, and they are. They're also a total handful. People ask, who's your easy kid? And nobody comes to mind. Seriously. And we're resting in the reality that mellow and compliant are not in our gene pool. And it's just our lot in life, and that's okay. Keep us on our toes. For instance, this was our Easter family photo. You guys, we tried really hard to get one of those really beautiful family photos that I saw going around on Instagram, and it seriously wasn't happening. So we just went that direction and played to our strengths. the other more than meets the eye there is that these three did not come easily. I know I don't have to say this to this room. You know that you don't have kids when you want to have kids, and the spacing you want to have kids doesn't work like that. So our first two came after a lot of heartache and loss. And then number three, just to keep life interesting, came along unplanned and unexpected. And I cried both when I found out I was pregnant with her and when I found out she was a girl. So, yeah. He didn't, but I did. But of course, as life goes now, I can't picture anything different than our amazing life with all pink life with these three nuts. So yeah, we are a beautiful mess. That was my favorite MOPS theme 1 year that I was in. I have a necklace that I wore so much that it broke. I gotta fix that said beautiful mess. That resonates with me so much, and that's gonna be a lot of our theme today, really.
So I think it's important to say that we believe in marriage. Hang in there. You know, we believe that, that in the same way that, well, I guess I'll start over. At our wedding, Emily's sister sang the song, Jesus Be the Center. And that is our paradigm, that's our goal, that's our hope, that Jesus would be the center of our marriage. It's very hard to do. In a simple way to kind of apply that, the same way that Jesus offered grace to save us, we have to extend grace to each other every single day. I think more importantly, you have to extend grace to yourself as well as to your husband. And it's a true starting over. And in the same way that God allows us to have free will to come to him, we have to choose to come to each other. I didn't know that when we were married. I thought just this love emotion would kind of keep us drawn. In order for us to stay married, we have to make choices every day. And we pray a lot because we really want to stay together. But it's not something that's natural. I think we imagine it being natural. We're naturally selfish. I want my life to be good. And in marriage, obviously, you have to be selfless. So it's a lot of work, but every day.
We just want to take a minute just also to say that we recognize that you have your own work that you're working on every day, and you have your own stuff that you're sitting with today. I think sometimes it just helps to say it out loud. So we, number one, acknowledge that no two marriages are alike, so a lot of what we say is not going to apply to you, and that's okay. Just grab what you can. We also just want to acknowledge that this room is full of hard things, besides the regular hard things of having small children. We know there's people who have gone through a divorce, maybe are on the edge of a divorce. We know there's postpartum depression.
Addiction.
We know there's addiction, infertility, miscarriages. We know some of you have special needs children. Some of you have dealt with cancer, and all of this obviously impacts your marriage greatly. And we can't speak to all of those experiences, so we just want to encourage you to take what you can from what we're sharing.
Yeah, and regardless of where you're coming from, we respect that you're going to hear us through tired, sensitive, and maybe even skeptical ears, and that's totally okay. We want you to walk away with just two things. I think that'd be my challenge and my hope to make this useful, that you could say, I got two action steps or two pieces of information or two areas where we're like, wow, we got better than them. If you already found those two things, I don't know how you did, but you can put your head down and rest. You're done. For the rest of you, we want you to have an open mind, and hopefully this is helpful, or at least you can be thankful that you're not up here with your husband on display. You're on display.
We also want to start off by keeping this very real. If we appear somehow to have figured things out, I assure you we have not. Nor are we an easy match. This is Exhibit A on the not easy match scale.
I will highlight one piece. If you look down where it says internal processor and a verbal processor, excuse me. If I'm not speaking, I'm actually not thinking. And this is a horrible fit for my wife because I just make her uncomfortable because I have to come to my thoughts. So if somebody wants to raise their hand and just pray for her that I don't, well, you can pray for me. I don't say something that's going to make her really uncomfortable.
Really, I'm really nervous. Like, he's going to go off script. I won't go off script. He will go off script. Okay, and then exhibit B on our how very real we are is that quick story on Palm Sunday. On the way to church, we managed to reopen a wound from a conflict we'd been having throughout that weekend. I started crying. Was unable to compose myself by the time we got to church. So I pulled in this entrance into the drop-off zone. I looked at Chris and I said, you can text me after church and I'll come back for you all.
It was awesome.
Bye-bye.
Awesome. Calm Sunday.
Our three children got out of the car really confused as to why mommy was pulling away. And honestly, one of the biggest tragedies of the whole thing was a completely wasted shower and outfit. Like, jeez.
Yeah, and it was interesting. That was awesome.
I went home. I drove home crying, and I did watch church from home. Is that so awesome and nerdy of me? Because I didn't want to miss church. Do you know that you can watch church from home now? Anyway.
Well, no, I was up in the balcony where we try to go. We think no one can see our crazy kids up there. And I'm trying not to make eye contact with anybody up there because I'm on the phone just texting, trying to figure out how we can work through this fight that we had. And it was a miracle. We did. We actually were productive. I have no idea what happened that day. And I'm sure everyone around me is wondering, what are you doing? But we have managed to eventually meet up at Panera. We hugged, we kissed, and we'd worked out most of the issues. And so it was a low moment, but I think the idea is that we were a mess. I mean, we were a mess even getting up to the stage. But we keep working at it every day.
He wanted to go that way. I wanted to go that way. It's okay. Okay.
Well, that's right.
Do you want to pray for us just to calm us down?
All right. Father, we are grateful for Fridays and Mops Days and just being up here and looking around. I'm in awe of all these amazing moms who sacrifice so much. And our prayer is that this would be useful and helpful and that you would meet every woman in this room where they need to be met. And we pray for their kids that you'd keep them safe and help them be joyful and happy when they see them. You know, it's a lofty prayer. When we're thankful that we can sit up here and share, and we pray for our words, that we'd be really words of love and words of care, and that it would be a time that would lead people away, walking away, saying this was worth their time. And I pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. All right, so we have organized our talk into 5 points today. This way you will know when we are coming to a close. Okay, first we have always we begin again. So this is a quote I first heard sitting in this room at a MOPS Christmas tea by Leanna Tankersley, who I know you had this fall, right? And then Dana told me, I lost Dana, she's in here somewhere, but she told me that she just came out with a book that's literally called Always We Begin Again, or it's called Begin Again. But it's based on this quote. So when she shared this quote at the tea, I honestly don't really remember much about the context of it, but it really stuck with me, and it really resonated with me. It was a rule of the Benedictine monks to remind themselves that each day is new, and you begin fresh each day. There's a verse in the Bible that says, His mercies are new every morning. I think that is the idea. I think the reason this is a point for us today is that embracing this mentality in marriage has been really, really helpful for us. One of the biggest mistakes that we made was assuming that marriage would work the same after kids as it did before kids. I don't know why we thought that. And then we continued on and kept thinking that once we had things figured out with one kid, marriage would work the same with a second kid, and then it would work the same with a third kid. That is so not the case. And Chris is going to explain a little more what that looked like.
Just to lay it out for us, we had Samantha, our first child, and it didn't rock us completely. Like, we were okay. We had struggles. I think that was kind of a setup, because then when we had Abby, our second kid, we were totally humbled. Everything we knew about marriage didn't really apply to two kids. And then we had Hannah, and again, we were waiting for that easy child. We were a total circus. And this idea that we were like, this isn't working. We have to reframe. So what did we do in terms of the begin again? We first admitted it, that this isn't working. You know, we were focusing on being parents, but we didn't know how to be a couple. And then we talked about it. And it was raw in the sense of, let's look back. You know, this idea of this marriage playbook that we've been using. You date, you get engaged, and then you kind of figure out how to work together. Some of it applies, but a lot of it has to change because you have all these other creatures that are wonderful that are pulling and needing things from you. I've never called them creatures.
No, yeah, that was new.
Starting to happen. And so we had to reframe and really begin again. Where was I going?
Example of what this means and what this looked like for us was when one was okay. When two got really hard, it was hard because we had to divide and conquer, and we just weren't connecting. And I had a moment of what you had referred to as brilliance, so I will just take that.
Wow, this was a brilliant moment. This was with number two.
This was in the heart of my MOPS years, where we had a baby and a, whatever she was, 2-3-year-old. We started this new practice 2 mornings off a week. So our schedule allowed for this at the time. Chris didn't have to leave for work till like 8:45. School schedule, or did we have preschool? I don't know. But here was the deal. We each got 2 mornings off a week, weekday mornings. You could do whatever you wanted with your time, but you had to report for duty at 8:30. You all know that a lot can happen prior to 8:30. That's like a lifetime before 8:30. So when we had our mornings off a week, we could sleep in if you wanted. And the idea is the other parent is on duty, you're off. You could sleep in, Chris would surf, exercise could fit in there if we were feeling particularly energetic. I would often just grab a book or a computer and sit in a coffee shop and just try to get out of my house and in some silent, peaceful mode. So this went on for a couple years, and it was amazing. And it might have been counterintuitive, but the idea was in order to have anything left for each other, kind of like what Jen was saying earlier this morning, we had to meet our own needs, and we had to love each other enough to encourage each other to meet our own needs. And it almost turned into a game where we were like excited. What are you going to do with your morning? How was your morning?
It was pretty profound. I mean, the idea that you think when you're struggling that you need to come together, and we really needed to go apart because we had this alone time. I think for Emily, there's just no time as a mom to ever be alone. And she had that need waiting for her. And so we figured that out. All of a sudden, we came to the table where our cups were a little more full. And again, like she said, we weren't resenting the other person. Even we didn't want to admit that we were, for getting in the way of meeting our needs. And so it was awesome. But it sustained us for a little while before we had to do the playbook again, because we had child number three. And schedules changed. I had to go to work earlier. I didn't have all the flexibility, and we had another child, so it wasn't quite as easy. And we had to have that conversation of, okay, what's working, what's not, and be real about it, not just play the part. And out of that came, okay, we'll do Saturday mornings off or Friday mornings off. We got a little more intentional with dates. The point of it is to give you a little peek into this idea of having conversations when it's not working, where you need to begin again. And I think it's not that you're doing anything wrong. It's just the reality has changed. The arena has changed. And you can't always apply everything that you knew when you have Junior. I've never called him Junior. This is great. This is original thought taking place here.
And the main idea here is you can't fit the old you into your new life. And in this phase of life, your life is always changing. Every kid, every stage, you could throw in a job change too. But the idea is the mentality is always we begin again. Yeah. Okay, let's go. And just being in that mindset together. Next is connection, connection, connection. One of my favorite authors, Jen Hatmaker, in her book For the Love, and my small group is already laughing at me because I can't make it very long in anything without referring to or quoting Jen Hatmaker. But she has a quote. If you don't know who she is, just buy her books and read them. She has a quote that I love. She says, "All due respect to the resurrection, but I think two becoming one might be the greatest miracle ever." This resonates with me because marriage sometimes feels like an impossible math equation, and it feels like a miracle of epic proportions. I mean, it feels like an outrageous idea when you really think about it. And it is, and that's what makes it so great. In order for two to become one, we need a lot of connection. And the hard truth is that kids, although they help us love each other more and see new parts of each other and fall in love in different ways, they also just straight up disrupt our connection or make it literally and physically impossible. We have a child who, no matter what, she's like a radar for when we are embracing in any form. And she like comes around the corner and just inserts herself between us and tries to break us apart. It's usually because she's trying to get me away so that she can hug Chris because she's a little obsessed with him, which is cute. I'm supposed to think that's cute, but it's kind of annoying.
It's cute until she just gives me glares like, you choose me.
She glares. But the point is, connection and communication is so hard in the MOPS years because your kids' needs are so high. I mean, they can't do anything for themselves in the years that you're in. The stakes are high. You're literally keeping them safe and saving their life on a daily basis. So your focus needs to go there, but what naturally happens is you get disconnected.
Yeah, and disconnection, I think, is subtle. It's not that it's dramatic. It may just be that we experienced where you have one or two children and you're not making as much eye contact. Simple. Or coming in the door, we're not greeting each other as quickly because we're just like, here's a child, or I got to do this. I got to the bathroom. I haven't gone to the bathroom in 3 hours. And so you start to slowly disconnect. And we realize we had to, you know, these kids, well, they demand so much of your mind and so much of your conversation that you forget to talk about marriage. You just talk about kids all the time, and the marriage work, the marriage conflicts need to get the pause button. And so I think, and the irony here is that marriage is the most important part of parenting.
Chris, could you say that one more time?
I can. Marriage is the most important part of parenting. We tell our kids this. If we come to the table parenting them where we're joined, and you know the feeling when you're disconnected, it's very hard to direct children and make good decisions. And so we try to have a parent-centered household as opposed to a kid-centered household, meaning we want them to see that this environment is designed to encourage and support and protect our marriage in order that we can be more effective parents for their sake. And we tell them at a young age.
We do. Before they could even understand, what it usually looked like is when we would be leaving on a date night and children were like physically holding onto our ankles to try to prevent us from leaving, we would say, we know they didn't understand this, but we just started talking about this early. Like, this is actually a gift for you that mommy and daddy have mommy and daddy time. You don't understand this now, but you will. We're going to be back. Have fun with your babysitter. Get this child off my leg, and let's go. Obviously, with a parent-centered household, we're not talking about not meeting your kids' needs, and obviously, so much of our energy and focus and time and money is all towards the kids, but we just try to keep the mentality that our marriage is the most important thing in our household and for our kids.
And it's really I think parenting is the path of least resistance when marriage is going through a difficult time, because it's neutral. Let's just do this. And I think, you know, we don't try to operate out of fear, but we know at some point they may leave the house, and we don't want to be looking at each other and wondering what we have together. That you have to keep do it throughout the process, staying connected. So in this theme of connection, we're going to talk about conflict. There's three areas, actually. Yep. So the conflict, we're going to talk about sex and our spiritual lives. So conflict. Conflict is connection. Some of you are like, we were really connected then. It is. I mean, a relationship void of conflict is often a relationship void of passion. It's unavoidable. And I think the idea, I'm talking about healthy conflict, not, you know, where you're all at each other. The idea is you're speaking the truth, you're disagreeing, you're not going dormant and getting passive-aggressive or just ignoring an issue. For some of you that have experienced good conflicts in your relationship, you know what it feels like when you work through it. And it might take a while, you might take breaks and come back to it, but when you've gone through the conflict and you're both honest and maybe even civil at times, you move up a level in your relationship. Like you were here, and then you're here. And it's amazing that it can happen that way. When I work with couples in private practice, it was common that they were at the end of their relationship. They kind of had my card and the lawyer's card, and they're like, what can you do? And I definitely didn't try to fix anybody's relationship. But often it was conflict they want to talk about. And some couples were really discouraged because they were so volatile. And I would often tell them, that's a great place to start. At least you care. You're not at a point of indifference. You're allowing the other person to affect you. Let's start there. It was the other couples that I got concerned about, the ones that said, we don't fight at all. we're beyond that. And they are at a point of apathy. And I would say that in your relationship, if you're feeling like it's boring, it may mean that you need to have more conflict, to be honest. But I'd also say that if you're not having conflict, and again, every marriage is different. I just mean about being honest. It can be a dangerous place because you need to be able to come to the table and speak your mind, even if it's different from your spouse's.
The other great thing about conflict is when we have conflict and when we have it in front of our kids, we have a chance to model for them what healthy conflict looks like. Those are such huge teachable moments because, you know, they are always, always watching. So we have a chance to model big things for them, civility when you disagree, forgiveness, repentance, huge things when you allow yourselves, I'm not talking about like a blowout fight, but just you allow yourself to be real and have some back and forth and have conflict in front of your kids. Our oldest, we recently asked, I don't even know why we asked this, but we asked, how do you know that mommy and daddy love each other? And one of the things she listed right away, actually, was that when we have conflict, we always hug and make up at the end. And I thought that was so interesting that that was a model to her of love. And, I mean, right, that is love. It's all about forgiveness. And marriage, oh my word, Anne Lamott says Earth is forgiveness school, and there is nowhere that's more true than in marriage. We forgive each other all the time.
And I think it's important to say I didn't come into the relationship this way. I came from a family that was void of conflict, which is sounds great, but it was really unhelpful because it was so dishonest. And I married Emily, who came from a family that was very comfortable with conflict.
Very comfortable.
And so when we were dating, I didn't know what to do with it. And I had to really, in order to enter into the arena, I had to not only know how to do that, but I had to see that it was okay. And obviously I've evolved a little bit. But it's a real disservice to your kids, I think, when you don't show conflict in front of them. Because they think it's just all peaceful and always works out. When in reality, you have to work things out together. And so doing it in front of your kids is a service to them.
The other positive aspect of conflict is makeup sex. I hope you know what this means. This brings me to our next essential way of connecting in marriage, which is sex. So this is the part where I'm going to just feel nervous right now. Talking about sex, and I just don't know what he's going to say.
Somebody pray out there.
We go to church with all of you, or some of you. Okay. So some of you out there might be magical unicorns who have not skipped a beat in this department since having children, and I applaud you.
Awesome.
That's fabulous.
Amazing.
Enjoy that. For the rest of us, this is an area of connection that takes a hit after kids. Can I get an amen on that? My dad used to say of the baby years, the mops years, that sleep is the new sex. Right? Oh, my word. That was like the most nods I got.
It wasn't funny. It was serious.
Oh, my gosh. I love it. So our first romantic overnight getaway when we were new parents, Samantha was, I don't know, one or something. And we had big plans. We went to a nice dinner. We had a cute little hotel booked. We got really lucky, and it was going to be the season finale of Lost that night, right? Just adds to the date. We were going to do really, really great connecting that night. No kids around. And what happened is we fell asleep at 8:45.
We felt like failures. We woke up at midnight.
We
missed it.
We felt like we missed it, but we didn't. There was more left of the date. But the point is that sleep is the new sex in your phase. I do want to encourage you, well, it gets better. I'm just going to say that. There's hope. I had a conversation in the bathroom right before with Nikki. And she's like, does it get, not about sex, but like, just does it get better? Sorry. It does get better, and this does too. Anyway, so sex is tricky after kids. It's a logistical nightmare. Children are coming in, waking up at all hours of the day and night. Your hormones are off. You are so tired. You have been touched all day long. And you just sometimes don't want to be touched anymore at the end of the day. And sometimes, frankly, sex just, well, a lot of times just isn't sexy. But I just want to encourage you that even that's okay. You can begin again, always begin again in this area also. What that looks like is working on it, getting creative, talking about what's working and what's not, which can be awkward, but just do it. Just talk about it. help your husband understand what you're going through and why it's a tricky area for you. Reframing is important. The nighttime might be the worst time to have sex. Maybe you need to do it in the morning. Maybe you need to set your alarm for 4:30. Your husband will not be opposed to this, I promise you.
If it's bad, you'll never remember.
You'll
back to sleep.
When your kids are old enough, use technology to your advantage. Put on a movie, an iPad, whatever it takes. I had a conversation with someone in this room who will remain nameless about sex in the shower. She referred to it as multitasking. I actually thought that was kind of brilliant. But the one piece of advice that I want you to remember is very important. Just always, always lock your bedroom door. I mean, like, always.
We have one of those doors that you lock it, but you have to push it shut.
Just always lock your bedroom door. Okay. Also, just as a reminder, I remember sitting at a mops table and having a conversation that was so basic but so profound. This is such an easy way to love your husbands, ladies. Like, they are not complicated, and they really appreciate when you give them this gift, and you can do it. And it's just, it is a gift that they are happy to receive anytime.
So, there's obviously men and women view sex differently, and this isn't anything new to you. Men often view sex as connecting. For some of your husbands, this is the only way they show intimacy. Hopefully there's more. And then women, typically, it's the result of feeling connected. It's that whole microwave and crock pot. Has anybody heard of that mentality? It becomes very real during the MOPS years, where men are ready in about 30 seconds with the button. And women, it may take a whole day of warming up and prepping and kindness and touching before they can even consider it. And that confuses men. And for some of you...
But tell him that. Like, remind him. Maybe go home with the microwave and crockpot thing today, just so he understands that you're not a microwave. I actually say that sometimes to Chris, like, no, I'm not a microwave. This is not happening.
I'm like,
right
it's
now.
A show on. This is our moment. We got one little window. Yeah, but no, it's
see,
true.
That
it's
was like... unscripted, and now I'm uncomfortable. Okay, go ahead.
It's my job. But some of you in the room may be having bad sex. You don't need to raise your hand. And it may just be bad sex, like an off day. But some of you may have had that going on for a long time. And I would say if that's the case, you can't just continue the way you're going. You need to do something about it. And it may be figuring out why. I'm not going to say the way Emily wanted me to say it. I said we're going to bring in a third party. But I meant a therapist. It's good, too.
We talked about not...
Sorry. So having someone who can guide you through the questions... And talk about it. It's real, because this is one of those areas that can be the underlying conflict that's not resolved and can be this very untouchable. Sometimes you just don't have the map to deal with it, and sometimes it's difficult to bring up with friends because it feels so personal. But I just encourage you, reach out to someone that may be a counselor or you know a friend and talk about it. Make sure you don't keep in the unhealthy habits. We did it. Well, I would say,
sex.
Yeah.
No. Oh.
There's so much we can say about sex. We'll stop there.
I feel like that's enough. Okay, so I have no good segue for this one, but the next area of connecting is your spiritual life. And let's not make any mistake. I mean, sex is a holy thing that God created. So actually, there's my segue right there. So your spiritual life. This is an area that's tricky. I think we can all agree that we are spiritual beings with spiritual needs, and therefore... It would seem natural that we'd want to connect with our husbands in this way, in some way, shape, or form. But it's tricky because we are also individuals bound in a unit, and we have our own spiritual path, our own spiritual journey, our own spiritual baggage. So it's tricky to have you can't have a completely joined spiritual life, but it sure is nice when we are on similar paths. Again, Jen Hatmaker said on the topic of sticking together spiritually, that this is the most eternal portion of your union, so treat it with the utmost of care. If you and your spouse are on the same path spiritually, awesome. Keep working at that and enjoy it and encourage each other on and walk that path together. I know some in this room have a thriving faith, but your spouse does not. I want to encourage you, if this is you, to just take baby steps. Don't be satisfied with faith being your thing and not his thing. but continually take risks and put yourself out there to attempt to connect in little ways in this area. I mean, this could be as simple as praying at the dinner table consistently and with your kids. It can be as simple as inviting your husband to church. And then even if he's said no 30 times, like, keep inviting him. Everybody likes to be invited, and he's going to always want to know that he's wanted there. So just keep inviting him. You can always go out on a limb and share something that you've learned at church or at small group or at MOPS. You can read books together. We have some books over here that you can look at that are some great titles, and we can give suggestions for books you could read together. A great way to connect spiritually is to serve together. If you guys have done Community Serve Day through this church or just volunteered in another capacity, that is a great way to overlap your hearts spiritually. The biggest one, though, I think is to keep praying. Just never stop praying for your husband's faith, just like you do for your children's faith. Keep at it. You can do this every day. You can do this privately. And I just want to encourage you to keep making steps, baby steps, taking risks, and just know that God wants a relationship with your husband way more than you want your husband to have a relationship with him. So he will answer your prayers. Nobody knows about timing. We've had people speak in our small group about, it was a former mentor mom who I think prayed for a husband for 40 years. I'm not saying this is going to be you, but the point is, life is long, God willing, and just don't give up on him. Just keep trying to connect in that way.
Yeah, I think it's when it's so important to you, it should be important to him. And I think sometimes it's just a matter of inviting him to come and focus on what you have in common, where it may be the values that are being taught, and he's going to need to wade through the more uncomfortable parts, which may be the worship or the prayer or the spiritual conversation, and just help find a common denominator where you feel like you do connect. So the idea in these three areas, conflict, sex, and spiritual life, they're just three places to connect. And we want you to know that the path of least resistance is disconnection. It's easier to disconnect. It takes effort. For us, we've learned it's a really powerful statement in terms of, you know, what works is to say to the other, I'm feeling disconnected. Sometimes that means it's a simple tweak of, I just need to look at you, or we just need to go for a walk. Or it may be, I think we're disconnected because we have some unresolved stuff. And it's not accusatory. It just kind of lays the groundwork. But for us, it's been really some of our most meaningful conversations have come out of, I'm just feeling disconnected. So next one.
All right, dating. This is my favorite one. And unfortunately, last night when we timed ourselves, and I'm looking at the clock now, we had to cut out a lot in this area. But we're going to just go through some things rapid fire here. So dating, obviously, is a great way to connect. And in the MOPS years, the reality is that sometimes you just need to flee your home in order to connect with your husband, because the kids' needs are never going to stop when you're in your house. So this is why we need to date. And it is also one of those places where we are constantly beginning again. You have to constantly be recreating what your dating life looks like based on your kids and their ages and your sitter situation, all of it. Financial situation. I know you know that dating is good, so I won't get into the why we need to date, but just want to share some practical suggestions and just touch on some areas where we typically struggle regarding dating.
And I do want to encourage those of you, because we've done that before, where you feel like we've done this, that ship has sailed, it's not going to happen, it's not working, just have an open mind. Sometimes, like the begin again, things don't work for a season, and you can revisit them and try again, and then we'll give you some practical ideas. But I just encourage you to have an open mind about dating.
So I'm going to do this quickly and hope you can just grab what you need as I go. So sitter struggles. This is a big one, right? Nodding again. We've never lived near family, so we have totally and utterly depended on babysitters.
Our kids are still alive.
Yes, it's all worked out. Finding and keeping them can be hard, but this is an area to work at and to invest in. You're going to have more misses than you have hits. But when you have the misses, you still got a date out of it. And maybe you learned some things and just let it go and then move on to someone else. There are many good places to find sitters. Just always keep your sitter antennas up. I have picked up sitters in the park randomly. I'm serious, because I just got a good vibe or there was a conversation and then I took a risk, tried them out. One of them was Allie's sister, who we have known and loved for 8 years now. I literally picked her up in a park. I probably seemed like a lunatic at the time. I was like, you look like a babysitting age. I need a babysitter. Your parents went to Westmont, so you should be fine. That's what I did. The thing about sitters is the ones that are the hits that you just can tell are awesome, invest in them. Not because you need to get something out of them, but because they're taking care of your kids and loving your kids. Get to know them. Spend time with them. Young women out there, obviously, they want connection with families and with kids, and they want to be part of your family. And if you invest in them and get to know them, they're going to want to babysit for you.
Yeah, we
honestly.
Often will, it's crazy, but we'll come after a date, get home at whatever, 10:30, 11 o'clock, and we'll sit with them for half an hour, 45 minutes, just to talk about their life. And we're doing it because we care about them, but we also are aware that loving on them, they're going to be more connected to our family, and they become like family. And so, in a way, we've also viewed it kind of as a ministry, and we've gotten to know these girls and their boyfriends one at a time, and just their whole life, and it's really been an impact on our kids because they're seeing the connection we have with the babysitter.
And truly what results, which is so fun and surprising, is you get to see a young woman through stages of her life, and she becomes a dear family friend. Another sitter struggle I just want to put out there, I get it, it is scary. It's scary to leave your kids with a babysitter that you don't really know how it's going to go. But again, just take that risk. I am nervous to this day, 11 years into parenthood. I'm nervous every time we leave for a date.
She does this thing, I mean, it's scripted. Every time we leave the garage, and she looks at me and said, they're going to be okay, right? It doesn't matter who it is. It could be my parents. Actually, that's when she asks.
It's true.
And I say, yeah, it's going to be okay. And I just say that. Obviously, I mean it. And then 100 yards down the road, they're going to be okay, right? They're okay? Yeah, they're fine. It's three times, and then one more, and then I know we're good on the date, and she's present.
And I usually have to pray. I like say my little babysitter prayer, and then I just have to make myself let it go. And that's my encouragement to you, is just take the leap. They are going to be okay, ladies. They are. Okay. Sorry. Another thing with sitters is you're also building in your kids, when you leave them with sitters, a skill set of getting to know new people, of being independent, of being okay without you. You know, we are raising little adults. Like, that's your mentality when you're raising kids, right? So you want kids that can thrive and be flexible in all different types of situations. So it helps them also. Okay, another big one is related to dating is money. If money is not an issue for you, awesome. Enjoy big, fancy, expensive dates. Seriously, you should. However, I know that the minute I say dating or babysitter, some of you have already shut down and are like, nope, 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 can't afford it. Can't afford to date. Well, guess what? I'm here to give you ideas. And I've got five of them so that next time you or your husband is like, dating is too expensive, you just can look at your hand and be like, oh yeah, that girl one time talked about five reasons why we can date on the cheap or for free. So here they are. Sitter swaps with friends. We have been doing this literally for 11 years. Not consistently. It looks different at every phase of parenthood. You always begin again here. But find a trusted friend, a family that you love, and just do sitter swaps with each other. There are so many creative ways to do this. I could totally talk to you afterwards if you need this fleshed out a little more. But it's a cool way to connect with friends and deepen friendships also, because you're watching your friends babysit your kids and love on them, and that bonds you even more. And it's a fun benefit to that. The other one is free dates. We live in San Diego, you guys. The beach is right there. It is free to walk on it. It is free to sit on a bench and enjoy a sunset. And we're just talking about connections, so it doesn't need to be something big and fancy. There's also hiking everywhere, so you can do free dates where we live because it's nice year-round. I'm from Chicago, so like 50 degrees, that's still nice weather, you guys. Don't use that as an excuse. The other one is home dates. We had a season where, I don't know, our kids were too difficult at the time, or we were between babysitters, and so we would be intentional to have home dates. What this meant to us was that we would sit in a different space than we normally did at night. Probably you're like us, and you have your normal nightly routines. So set an intention. We're going to have a home date tonight. Pick a different couch or a different table. light some candles, open a bottle of wine, have some dessert, and just purpose to connect for like 30 to 60 minutes. It doesn't need to be big and dramatic. We get it that you're exhausted. You don't want to talk about big things. You don't have to. Maybe it's just a true how is your day conversation that will leave you feeling more connected.
No, but it's amazing how subtle it is. I mean, just if you move the room that you're in and you make an intention to say, we're going to connect, we're going to look at each other, as opposed to we're going to do our normal routine, which may be the dishes or whatever, all of a sudden you are connecting. And I want you to know it can be even 10 minutes. And I know we're in the category of a date, but it's easy to go for a long period of time without stopping and saying, hey, let's sit and look and talk, because busyness, again, disconnection is the path of least resistance. So I like the idea of the ultimate staycation in your living room.
Fourth option that's cheap is family. If you have grandparents that live nearby or siblings or whoever, use your family. Grandparents love to just be grandparents, so let them be grandparents. Don't make them be the parents. I know different situations if they're like a regular childcare provider for you, but the mentor moms would probably nod to this in this room that grandparents actually love it when the parents leave, because they get to connect, right, in different ways with the grandkids. Like, get the kids act differently when we're gone. They can bond differently, so let the grandparents babysit. If you don't have family nearby, we do not, take advantage of them. Give them that connecting opportunity with your children when they come to visit. We're pretty good about when parents come to visit booking a date night for ourselves, and sometimes even an overnight.
Yeah, they literally come in the door, we're like, hi guys, see ya. And we just hand them the kids and we're so ready to go.
And the reality is they probably prefer to see your kids than you anyway at some point. The fifth one is church dates. Seriously, church is like a date. I have always felt this, and I still do when we dismiss the children in the sanctuary. It's free child care. It is, and it's just us. Like, we sit there, it's just a chance to be, to breathe, to be quiet, to listen, to take in music, to take in a message. You can hold hands in church. It's true. So also, church is a place that is very pro-marriage. There are a few places in this world that are for your marriage. Church is one of them. So pay attention, whether it's this church that offers a lot or your church that you go to, look for marital offerings, courses, classes, date nights, marriage course, and just don't let those opportunities go by. Just grab them. And the childcare, I mean, we chose to go to this church, I swear to you, because of Jen Engelhardt. Like, right? This church, that's a way that this church prioritizes marriage and family, is by the amazing way they love on our kids. So embrace that. Okay, Chris is going to talk about something I'm really excited about.
So this is the 24-hour date. It's a big deal. And we have this, the idea we talked about here is this whole idea of dating you, there you are. And we're going to show a clip. We are really good speakers. We'd have lots of clips. You wouldn't see the talking heads, but we're regular folk. And this is a scene from Hook where he's come back, he's an adult figure, Robin Williams, if you've seen it, and doesn't quite know that he's Peter Pan, and the Lost Boys also don't know if this man is truly Peter Pan, and so he has a chance to kind of look in and have a there you are moment. And so as you watch this, I want you to imagine that this is you and your spouse. If we're blocking, go ahead and look at the side ones. It's your husband.
Or you. I think it's actually you.
Okay. So we really feel like, you can cut it there, we experience this, right? You have extended periods of time with your spouse. All of a sudden, you remember, oh, we're fun. It's not just that you're a lifeguard or a policewoman or you name the other role that you've had to sacrifice to become. You get to connect, and it was almost like it was the two of you before there were kids.
We literally say this to each other when we do these 24-hour dates, like, there you are. I remember you.
So sad. But the idea is that it takes extended period of time to get there. Sometimes the evenings, you're just kind of recovering and getting back, or you're returning to something. When you have, even if it's 12 hours, just extended period where you can allow this time to go by to kind of shake off your role, it's a beautiful thing. And so we encourage you to consider getting through the fear. Some of you may already go to Ireland once a year and you do this great, a week without your kids. I'm guessing not. But I really encourage those of you who haven't done an overnight date to consider it as a way of deep connection.
And again, I have a ton of ideas that I edited out. So if you want to have some suggestions, even for how to do it really cheap, there is where there's a will, there's a way. The other thing about planning these 24-hour getaways, well, one is it needs to be intentional or it's not going to happen like anything. We make a goal. It might sound like a little goal to you or a big goal. I don't know. But for us, during the MOPS years, now we can do it a little more easily, but during the MOPS years, it was one 24-hour date a year.
Yeah.
But you get more out of it than that 24 hours. You get the fun of planning it, anticipating it, and then you get all the fun memories. I mean, we had years, I remember, where we could only pull off 16, but we, like, cherished every hour of those 16 hours.
It's sad.
It is sad, but also have hope that it does get better. Like now, I think we do it a couple times a year and a couple nights. Anyway, it gets better. I'm just here to encourage you as your kids get older.
Okay, so we're going to move along here. I'm going to tell you three things as sort of the from the husband moment. There's so much that I could say that I won't say. But three thoughts. So one, and again, these are thoughts that you may have already walked through, so don't assume that I may be preaching to the choir, but I just want to say them. The first one is to empower your husband. Okay, so you've entered in the arena of parenting, some of you, first-time parents, it's babies. As a guy, I wasn't handed a lot of babies, so I had no idea how to do this. I did not have the natural maternal instincts that my wife has. I had to learn that, which means I made mistakes and did it wrong. And it makes a big difference how I'm treated. Emily did a great job here. She was smart, and she's like, I got to empower this very insecure, sensitive guy. Because if she were to react, oh, you're doing it wrong, or fix that, oh, let me do it because I do it right, I probably would have backed up a little bit and felt bad and felt insecure and said, all right, I think this is, you're going to do this part.
And then I would have been on my own. Like, do you see how this works? Like, you need them fully engaged.
Yeah, I mean, it's a situation that does happen where you don't realize you're doing it, and then you resent your husband for not being more engaged when really you set the stage for that. And so one idea is to have him have extended periods of time with your baby, your child, where he can make mistakes and figure it out himself, and then just encourage him. In that same vein, we kind of have this idea that we talk about let you be you and let me be me as parents. It sounds messy, but there's a piece that you guys are different, and what you bring to the table is different, and it's to be celebrated. It's good for your kids. So a simple example, common, that guys tend to be a little less safe with their kids. Maybe that's an understatement. And that's uncomfortable, right? And it's not that we're careless, we're just clueless, I guess. And so we've learned that it's good that I bring in some of that with the kids and that Emily can be more protective and conservative with them. She's not that conservative, she's risky, but the point of it is there's a difference. And we've learned to celebrate that and that I don't feel completely disarmed that I can't be myself with the kids. And so having that conversation, though, is really empowering for guys. The last piece is the reality that you're in the MOPS times, you're tired, and so you're not talking about things as much, and what you want is your husband to read your mind. It's a newsflash, he cannot read your mind. And I would challenge you, don't use it as a way to test his knowledge and love for you. It's a horrible cat and mouse game that is, it just leads to disappointment and confusion. The best gift that you can give him is to state your needs. It's so important for us that we had a time where we put our kind of lowest hanging fruit of how to love each other on our mirrors. Emily's were all A's.
And really complicated, like
mine
complicated
were all S's.
Things.
I'll just tell you, is surf, sex, supper, and state your needs. Okay? That's how important it was. And again, these aren't all the ways you love me. This is just the low hanging fruit. But the idea that it's so much better for me to know, is it me? Okay, it's not. Okay, what can I do?
And ladies, this is win-win, because when you say your needs, aren't the odds a lot higher that your needs are going to get met? And then you make your husband feel like a hero. So if you, because he met your needs and he's happy that you're happy, if you went home today with just this and started stating your needs more and having him read your mind less, he would be like waving the MOPS flag, like from your front step.
He's trying to, but it's just failure. So three things: empower your husbands, let me be me, let you be you. What, did I skip something?
No, I'm just feeling nervous about the time.
Oh.
Are we fine?
We're on our last point. Are you guys okay?
Yes.
Okay. We don't do this. We don't have time. And then the last one was, don't let him read your mind.
State your needs.
Yeah, sorry. Boom. So our last point.
For this, don't go it alone, power of vulnerability. For this, we're just going to tell you a little of our story and let that speak for itself.
Yeah.
Take it away.
Okay. How are we doing? Okay. Thank you, guys. This is fun for us. Thank you. So we got married young, and we found ourselves in a new state. We lived in Colorado, no family there, and no friends. And so part of the two things there, we didn't have a lot of role models for marriage. We were young, and we didn't have any older friends or friends of family to follow. And so our perception of marriage was that you go it alone. It's private. It's a private partnership, and let's talk about it together. And then we'll come to the world and make friends when we look really good. Nobody really told us about talking about marriage. They told you to talk about money and how to do lifestyles, maybe parenting, but marriage was private. And so this idea of vulnerability wasn't a part of the marriage package. That was a private subject. We made friends, of course, and we would interact with them, but we wouldn't talk about kind of the meaty things of marriage with them.
They were just so fun social relationships.
But eventually we hit some bumps. I mean, that's the reality as we went on, and we did have an underlying conflict that existed. It had to do with location. Neither of us from Colorado, and I had this bubbling up and said, I think I want to talk about moving to California. And we later named this the California Conflict.
It was so big it needed a name. The background on the California conflict is that when we accidentally fell in love our senior year, Chris had assured me that he was not one of those Californians who could only live in California. God's country. And I said, okay, fabulous, because I'm from the Midwest. I'm a Midwest girl. I went to college in California, but that was just for fun. I had no intentions of living in California. I wanted to get back to the Midwest. Chris, actually blinded by love, told me that he thought he was more of a Midwest guy at heart.
I meant it. I
should have taken the hint from his family, who burst out laughing when he said that. Also,
I didn't know.
At the time, had I understood a little bit more about surfers, I would have understood that similar to dolphins and mermaids, they don't do well away from the water. But I didn't understand enough about surfers at the time, so we got married and we moved to Colorado, which was perfect because it was right in the middle of our two home states. And we bought season passes, and I was sure that snowboarding would replace surfing. This made sense to me. Just one activity with another, and we had fun for about a year, and then, bam, about a year in, Chris, now having lived outside of California for the first time, so he actually was learning about himself, realized that he was, in fact, one of those Californians who could only live in California.
It didn't come out quite as that dramatic. It was, I wanted to talk about it. It was bubbling up. And actually, I mean, Emily was in a stage where she was like, shake this. This is geography.
Just shake it.
And so I went and saw a therapist.
He was he's so happy-go-lucky, and he was literally, I was watching him get depressed, which was sad, but not sad enough that I was willing to talk about it. So I was like, I'm not moving to California ever, 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 and we're not talking about it, and you duped me. You told me that this was not a thing for you. Now it's a thing for you. This is not okay. So I did something called stonewalling, which in the psychology books is defined as the persistent refusal to communicate about something.
Powerful.
It's very powerful. I just shut it down every time it came up. Nope, we're not talking about this. Not that I shared it with anyone in my life, because again, with the privacy thing we had going on, I didn't know. I didn't share this huge struggle we were having. And so what happened is it resulted in simmering bitterness that just boiled for like a couple years, you guys. And it really just stunk up our marriage for that period of time.
And yeah, it was, and again, it wasn't her fault. This is a two-way street. I just didn't know what to do with it. We couldn't talk about it. And I felt lonely and isolated, and that kind of magnified. I wanted even more. I mean, I'd put a surf video on, and she'd walk out of the room. But he was sensitive.
His parents sent us a Sunset Western Garden magazine for his birthday, and I was, like, irate. I was like, this is your mother's attempt to get us to move to California, because look at all the plants that could grow out west. I mean, ridiculous.
My mom actually brought that up a month ago and saying, that was a bad idea, Chris. I said, no, we're in a bad place. But it was a rift, and I think the idea is when you know that feeling when you come from the car and you've been in a conflict and you show up at friends' houses, they can kind of tell that you've been in a fight. There was an underlying disconnect that we had, and it was palpable. Like, our friends could feel it. And we even had one friend that would kind of check in, even if we hadn't talked about it. How's Team Kate's going? Because you could see. And again, in this theme of vulnerability, this was none of their business. We will deal this behind private doors, you know, and then we'll come to you when we're ready. And so we decided our marriage was at a great place, so we thought we'd start a family. Well, we tried. We had two miscarriages at 6 weeks, and that was a shock to our system. And again, with our approach to vulnerability, we didn't really allow others in. We dealt with it. It was very lonely.
I think we were used to things working out in life, and so this was an assault to that false concept we have of ourselves.
And there was a lot of shame and confusion. Are we doing it right? Are we ever going to have children? We went dormant. We didn't feel like this was a public conversation.
And we had friends try to reach out during that time, but we didn't allow them to step into that.
Yeah, we're good. We got this.
So then we did get pregnant, and we stayed pregnant, and we had our little Samantha Joy, which means God heard, because God did hear our prayers. As we said, we adjusted beautifully to having a baby, but nothing was resolved with the California conflict. In fact, we just stuffed it deeper because we were so happy being parents and so distracted by our sweet baby. So we didn't deal with it. But then during Sam's first 2 years of life, I had quit my job and went back to grad school, and I took a class about conflict. So that class obviously made me take a little bit of a look at myself and my part in this conflict. A couple weeks ago, I was in Chicago for spring break, and the pastor said something that I'm never going to forget. He looked, I don't even know how this related to the sermon, but he looked out at us and said, "You are the biggest problem in your marriage." And right? If we embraced... How dare he? How dare he? If we embraced that and had that level of humility, how much better would marriage go? But this is what happened to me in that conflict class. I realized that I was actually, there's always two sides, but I was the biggest part in that particular California conflict. So fast forward a little bit, and that class, it didn't totally change anything. It just made me look at the fact that I was stonewalling and maybe take down a couple stones, but it was
She's
still
like, I'm stonewalling.
It was still going up. I was like, I realize I'm a part of this, but I'm not going to do anything about it. So fast forward a little bit, and we got pregnant with number two, and my little controlling self was so happy. It was going according to plans. Baby was going to come right after I finished school. And they were going to be 2 years apart, which was, in my mind, the ideal spacing. And everything was going according to plans, and pregnancy was easy, uneventful. And then not so fast. So on December 8th, 2008, basically our life changed out of nowhere. I was 18 weeks pregnant and went to the doctor for some unusual symptoms. Was given a full workup, ultrasound, everything looked great. We really did not want to know the gender, so they managed to, even though it was a long ultrasound, keep the gender secret from us, which was fabulous. Anyway, and I was sent home just saying, we don't know what's going on, but you check out fine, so you're okay. So went home, and then that night I got what I thought was food poisoning and felt just miserable and was really sick. And is there feedback again? Sorry, it's my necklace. Got sick, felt terrible, called my doctor because I was scared, obviously. And the doctor assured me that, I'd just been in, so just ride it out. You really probably got food poisoning. And I'd eaten some soft cheese or something you weren't supposed to eat, so I figured it was that. So I was sick for like an hour, and then my water broke. And all of a sudden, I realized it was not food poisoning. Like, I had been in labor, and I didn't even recognize it. So we frantically called a neighbor who watched Sam. Oh man, isn't it amazing? Like 10 years. Raced to the hospital, and then faster than I could like take in what was happening, I delivered a sweet, still baby boy in an ER. And he was fine. He was perfect because it was just that I went into labor and they couldn't stop it. There was nothing they could do. So there we were at 1 a.m. holding our tiny little baby boy wrapped in a blanket. And then a chaplain came in. It was so out of body. And then we're talking to a chaplain. And then we're calling our families and they're booking tickets to come out. And then we are saying goodbye and handing over the baby that was just in my stomach that they told me was going to be okay. And then we had to drive home to our 20-month-old Samantha, and thankfully she was too little to know what was going on.
So everything was different. And I think the beautiful piece here was that sometimes in our pain, in our deepest pain, you don't have time to be dysfunctional. And we sat down at the computer together and made a decision to choose vulnerability. And we drafted an email to all of our friends and shared the story. And it was new to us, it was new territory. But we knew it was right. And so we decided to make more decisions about vulnerability. And we let people come to our home and give us food. And we allowed Emily's mops table to, I don't get emotional. We allowed Emily's mops table to do a meal train and give us food. And then we made another step towards vulnerability and allowed family and friends to fly in just to be with us. We didn't know where this was going, but we knew that we needed support. And so we just kept making choices towards vulnerability. And then we made another decision to have a small service, to market, have some closure. And it was meaningful for our friends to be there, meaningful for us to have this support group. And so as we made steps towards vulnerability and received support, we found we were more intimate with our friends. And this was wild to us. I mean, you have to understand, our concept of vulnerability was that you experience something, you process it, you synthesize it, and then you find a way to describe it in a nice little box with a bow on it, because you know the end of the story. And it looks like vulnerability, but it's already happened. You kind of know how it ended. This was entering in with friends when you didn't know how it was going to go. We didn't know the finish line. And that was new to us.
This experience, really, really good experience of vulnerability, after this really, really bad experience of losing our baby, also woke me up once and for all to what was going on in the California conflict, my part in it, and the damage that it could do to our marriage. When things are really bad, sometimes you're just shaken and you wake up and you understand what's really, really good.